the people who interact with me, the listeners who interact with me, all of them, every single one of them either has their own place or they're getting ready to purchase their own place or lease their own place. Mm-hmm. They're all doing some sort of farming and they want that to turn into something more full-time or something that looks like the lifestyle that I have now, which is basically get rid of the city job, stop spending 40 hours a week in a cubicle or whatever that may be, and spend more of that time out on the farm, out in the country, away from the life that they don't want.
Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system, from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson.
That was Matt Breckwald of the Off Farm Income podcast, and he has a really interesting program, and he's got a number of activities helping people that are either on a small farm and need to kind of expand and get off farm income, or sometimes it's people that have another job and they're trying to get into agriculture. And I was connected with Matt because my brother, Ron Wasson, who has Barnyard Discoveries, was interviewed by Matt for Matt's podcast. And Ron's here. Ron, I'm going to lean on you to help me introduce Matt. But before we do, why don't you introduce Barnyard Discoveries?
Well, actually, Barnyard Discoveries is a mobile farm exhibit that we take out, and we do a lot of educational programs with it. Originally, the idea was we started out about 10 years ago, and I developed a trailer that we take that we put the animals in, but we have a 32-foot trailer that is bus wrapped to look like a barn. And so when we pull into a parking lot with the trailer, it looks like there's a barn sitting in the parking lot. And inside the trailer, we have a series of small pens and with animals in the pens. And then we also have a big screen video playing videos of farm equipment working in the fields and things of that nature. We also have a display area of different grains and things that are grown locally, and as well as a small-scale model farm equipment area. But the animals are naturally in the animals are in the pens with signage around each pen to keep the educational part of it.
Well, you're taking the barnyard out to places. You're taking them to schools, events, and fairs, and all sorts of places. None of those places are open right now, are they?
That's right. We've been pretty close to home for a while.
But I bet the animals are still eating. And
oh, yeah. We've still got our end of the expenses are still there.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, this is the first time I've talked to you on Farm to Table Talk where we didn't hear the animals in the background. That they are usually, you and I have talked when you were down in the barn and feeding them. And it's, wow, what a chorus you've got down there.
Oh, we've got quite a variety. That's kind of the typical lineup in the trailer that we do take with us. We usually have We have a miniature horse, we have sheep, goats, a pig that goes with us, we'll have a calf that goes with us, an assortment of chickens and ducks that are there. So we've got the full barnyard effect when we take the trailer.
Well, you got the off-farm side of income. The income side's taken a vacation currently, I suppose. But you've got the off-farm covered because you got a farm and you're taking the farm out to people. So we can't get much more off-farm than that. How did you come to be a guest yourself on the podcast of Matt Breckwald that we're going to talk to?
Well, I was referred to Matt basically from some other friends of mine that have an operation they call Goats on the Go, located in Ames, Iowa. And they have developed a program where they've actually have a pasture, a goat grazing business. And they go out and they rent their goats and do a pasture, targeted pasture grazing business. And so they recommended they've gotten involved with Matt and then with their idea as far as the off-farm income. And we're doing something. We've kind of partnered with Goats on the Go to develop our own affiliate network where we're actually offering affiliate structure that we can actually sell to other people to go out and take Barnyard Discoveries out on the road as well.
So Matt interviewed you with the idea that you've got this unusual business that's connected with the farm, and then hopefully you would be able to sell that or a franchise or whatever, a unit of it, to other people that they could do this around the country. Was that the source of the conversation?
Yep. The whole idea was that it's actually at a point now where we can, we've gone through 10 years of business that we've made the mistakes and we've done some of the costly errors, but we've also developed a brand over that time and developed a following. And now we feel like we can go out and we've got a successful business plan that's been approved by the bankers and folks can take this out. And actually, you know, not only as far as an off farm income, but it's also, you know, we used to use the term diversified agriculture or diversified farming. And it's just basically what we're doing with all of these things is just creating an extra revenue stream to come into that farm program.
So before I start talking to Matt about what he's doing with off-farm income and all the people he's talking to all over the country every single week and several times, I believe, I guess I'd like to go back and give you an opportunity to tell people how they can check in to Barnyard Discoveries, where if they want to know more about when you're getting up and going again, or even just know about developing their own Barnyard Discoveries, how do they find you?
Well, we actually, most everything can be located on our website. It's just barnyarddiscoveries.com. And that has a pretty good explanation. We've got a, there's a short video production on there that, that it actually takes you on a tour through the trailer itself. It shows how the trailer is laid out, shows the animals that are inside the trailer and some of the guests that, that come into the trailer. But, then beyond that, you know, we're always open as far as the affiliate network. You know, because Illinois happens to be closed down right now, I think that there are other venues or other states around that can actually, you know, are operating fairly close to normal, or at least a little more normal than we may be at this point. So still an opportunity that, you know, different areas of the country, this is something that could be either, if you're not ready to jump in right now, it's at least something that I think when the new normal comes around, you could be in place and ready to hit the road with it.
Well, one thing you can do right now is you can listen to other people that put programs together like yours. And then Matt Breckwald, my guest today, has done that. And have you listened to some of the other podcasts that Matt did other than the one with you?
Oh, I have. Yeah, he's very interesting and does a lot of interesting podcasts with you know, people that are coming up. As I say, the folks that are getting very creative and identifying that that extra revenue stream into an operation.
Well, now I'm glad to have Matt Breckwald to be able to talk about what you're doing. And Matt, you've know that Ron Wasson is a fan of yours now that you had him on your show. And we've been talking about what you're doing with off-farm income. And it seems like you're really helping people realize their dreams, whether they're in a position they want to get more into farming and aren't currently, or they've got a small farm and they're needing to expand, but you're sharing ideas with them on how they can get from where they are now to where they want to be. Is that a fair representation of what you're doing?
Yeah, that is fair. We've got a small farm in Idaho, and I would love to farm full time. This is about as close as I've been able to get, which is, you know, I own and operate my own business from my farm. And so I'm here all the time, and there's a lot of reasons I think that's important. What I discovered some years ago was that a pathway to being able to do this, whether you want to go into production ag and try and become a full-time farmer or not, for the period of time that you do need side income, entrepreneurship was really, really appealing to me for many reasons, and that's what I started talking about on the off-farm income podcast, was how can you use entrepreneurship? What are some business types and models and things like that?
So did you grow up on a farm?
No, I grew up, I actually grew up not too far from where you're at. I grew up in Stanislaus County in California.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I lived in Modesto. I managed the almond board for a while.
Okay. I bet we know a lot of the same people. So I went to high school in Modesto.
Which school?
Grace Davis.
Grace. Oh, okay. My son went to Beyer, and he had a lot of friends that went to Davis, and they always had good football teams. Did you play football?
No, just baseball.
Okay. Well, they had good sports teams at Grace Davis.
Yeah. But I grew up in a small town before I went to Davis. I grew up in a small town called Valley Home, which is north of Oakdale. Mm-hmm. I grew up out there, and it was all agriculture back then when I grew up. There was a couple orchards, walnuts, and maybe just a couple almond orchards, but really it was rice farming and dairies and beef cattle when I grew up out there. Now it's all almonds and walnuts out there, and some grapes too as you get out, but things have changed down there quite a bit with these permanent crops. But anyway, I grew up around it, and then when I was about 15, my mom remarried, and my stepdad and his father raised cattle out in Hickman, which is on the other end of the county, south side of the Stanislaus County, and I got very interested in livestock, and so then I went off to college and got an ag degree, and have been kind of finding my way back to this ever since.
So where did you go to college?
I went to Modesto Junior College there in Modesto for 3 semesters in their ag department. Yeah. And then I went to Montana State University and got my bachelor's degree in ag, which that's the banner behind me there.
Oh, I see that. Yeah. Montana State. Well, the Modesto Junior College is a really good ag program too.
Yeah.
A lot of people get a great start there and then finish at another 4-year school. And I've been to Montana State, a great land grant university, and you got an ag degree there. Somehow, you didn't immediately jump into farming because you became a policeman. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I did a number of internships during college. So I worked on a few ranches and did that. I got an internship during college, and I sold ag chemicals for back then it was Zeneca Agricultural Products. So I did that. I did that in Idaho for 6 months, and I did it the next summer up in Montana for 3. And then after that, I went and I worked for Western Farm Service, which became Crop Production Services and then became Agrium. And I worked for them, not selling, but just doing basic run-of-the-mill, delivering fertilizer tanks, cleaning out tanks, putting in soil moisture probes, going out and checking insect traps in orchards, pulling petiole samples, just all that type of labor. I did that, and I did have a job offer when I graduated from Zeneca. They offered to bring me on full-time as a technical sales associate and go out and promote their line of products. But it just wasn't the right fit for me, and I couldn't find my fit in ag, and I did not have a career, a farm to return to or anything like that. And I had an interest in law enforcement, so I thought, well, I'm going to try it out. I just want to do it. You know, it was kind of a bucket list thing. But I ended up doing it for just right at 15 years. And so I ended up doing that for right at 15 years. And probably about year 10 or year 11, I was really starting to feel like, okay, this has kind of run its course. I'm ready to go on to something new in my life, a new challenge. I want to get back to rural living. I want to get back to agriculture. That's something that my wife and I had pledged to do, but we hadn't got there yet. We hadn't been able to buy our own farm yet or anything like that. So that kind of got those wheels turning, and then about in the year 15, I was able to make the transition over to farming and working for myself full time.
So in that time, you were a policeman. We were doing in the car, making calls, doing that sort of thing. The police, we tend to think of what police do.
Yeah, I started out with Tracy Police Department in Tracy, California, and was there for about 2 years. The thing that inspired me to be a police officer is I always wanted to be a sheriff's deputy where I grew up in Stanislaus County. So after about 2 years with Tracy, I took a transfer and went over to Stanislaus County Sheriff's Office and became a patrol deputy there. And I don't know, maybe I'd built it up too big a deal in my mind, but it was a bit of a letdown for me. So I did it for about a year, and I got a chance to come up to Idaho and be a herdsman on a cattle ranch. And my wife and I kind of looked at each other and went, why not? My family was in California. Her family was in Idaho. I'd gone to college up in Montana. I'd done an internship in Idaho. I really liked it up here. And being the deputy there wasn't everything I'd, you know, imagined it in my mind. And I thought, well, let's do it. So we left. And I actually left law enforcement, and I came up here, and I was herdsman on a cattle ranch down outside of Minidoka, Idaho, for about a year. That ranch ended up getting sold, and my job went along with that. And so my wife and I moved to Boise, and I ended up back in law enforcement, and then spent the next about 13 years in the criminal justice system, 12 of those as a police officer here in Boise, before I made that transition.
So your farm right now is near Boise?
Yeah, it's in Cuna, or right outside of Cuna, Idaho. And We're only about 16 or 17 miles as the crow flies from downtown Boise. And everything is growing out to us. So we're going to be surrounded by a white vinyl fence and subdivisions before you know it.
You know, already you're hitting on the things that so many people care about. And I know you find it all the time, too. The people probably listen to your podcast. And I find people listen to my podcast are often doing something else and wish they could at least full-time or part-time farm or get out of, you know, a little bit more in the open air, raise a family outside. You have a daughter that's, is it 9 years old?
She's 13 now.
Well, 13. Now you got some dated information on your website, I think.
I bet I do. You're right.
You got to go back and change your age. Well, that's a whole different thing. 13-year-olds are a lot different than 9-year-olds. So it's, you've already are living the dream as far as a lot of people are concerned. Now, I suppose the hard part is just say, let's do it. So the fact that you and your wife felt the same way and it's good. Okay, we knew we wanted to do this, and you do it, and you found the opportunity to get out there. But then you got to build enterprises, be this entrepreneur that puts enough together to pay the bills and make the mortgage payment save a little money for the other things you want to do as a family. So How'd you go about that? Did you say, we got this place, and you have a whiteboard or something, and you just start making a list, and let's try this, let's try that?
No, it wasn't that. So I am not a natural born entrepreneur, meaning that I am not the type of person who looks at risk and isn't bothered by it. I am bothered by risk. And, you know, at the time we bought this place, it's 25 acres, so it's not a huge farm. There was a house on it, and that was it. It was 25 acres of weeds. There was no fencing. There was no irrigation set up, no outbuildings, none of the stuff we needed to do what we'd kind of envisioned. So that started the process there. But during that same period of time that was leading up to buying this place, I had been thinking about what could I do to start my own business. And I never, ever thought that I would go out and start a business. Like, I never thought I would quit my police job and then just go start a business. Mm-hmm. So I started a side business. I started one other side business in about 2000 and I'm going to say 2010. And it was a security consulting firm. And I still think it's a great idea. I really do. Matter of fact, I'm convinced it's a great idea. But I was kind of burnt out on law enforcement and everything that was kind of within the atmosphere of law enforcement. And so I could never sell this service, which I was convinced was very, very good. But I met with people, went out, did the requisite things, but I could never get anybody to sign on board. And what I decided was that I was kind of burnt out on that life. I wanted to get back to the life I had known growing up. And so without me being fired up and excited about it, I just couldn't sell it. And I think that's probably a pretty obvious statement. You need to be excited about the thing you're trying to get people to spend money on. Sure. Otherwise, why will they be excited? So that went nowhere, but it was an idea. There wasn't a whole lot of capital or anything like that invested into it. But then when I was a detective, and this is a long story, but when I was a detective, I was on a stakeout. I was watching a guy's house who was supposed to be stalking his ex-girlfriend. And while I was sitting down the road watching to see if I could catch him stalking her, some guy pulled up across the road from me with this really funny looking trailer hooked up to his pickup. And he stopped and he took it off the pickup and he put up the jack stands and got it all stable. Then he opened it up and these weird things came out of it. Like this big boom came out of it and there was a computer on the inside. And I don't know what it was, but it was very interesting. It was like nothing I'd ever seen. He got it all set up and then he went up to the house he'd parked in front of, knocked on the door. The guy came out. He explained how everything worked. I could see this all going on. They shook hands. He received payment, left the trailer there and left. So he delivered this to this guy. And as I was watching that, I was like, that's what I need. I need to find some unique piece of equipment that I can go out and I can work with farmers by having this piece of equipment. So that kind of planted a seed for me. And then right after we bought our farm, because I had just been banging my head against the wall for what can I do for a business. I couldn't come up with anything. I could picture the lifestyle I wanted. I could picture all of that, but I could not picture the business. And it wasn't too long after we bought this place, I had subscribed to the Capital Press, which is an agricultural newspaper here in the Pacific Northwest and down into California. And I had subscribed to that, and there's a guy in far reaches of Northern California, almost to Oregon, who has a company called H&M Gopher Control. And he had created a device he called a PERC, which is an acronym, P-E-R-C. And it stands for Pressurized Exhaust Rodent Control. And it's this machine you could take out into the field, and you could exterminate pocket gophers with it. And you could also exterminate ground squirrels and really anything that tunneled, that burrowed into the dirt. And when I saw that ad, I thought, man, that's it. That's the thing, the mm-hmm. weird piece of equipment I could buy, where I could go out and I could provide a service for farmers and get back into agriculture. And so I did all my research, called people around the country. I went and met with a guy who had one and ran a business, had two actually, and took him out to lunch and talked to him about it. And I got convinced that this piece of equipment actually worked and that I could build a business. And then where I live, there were no competitors doing anything like this. Nobody had that piece of equipment. So I went back and forth multiple times, almost buying it and then talking myself out of it. And finally, it was May of 2012, early May of 2012. Finally, at like 4 a.m, it was one of those moments out of a movie where I like sat up straight up in bed, wide awake, and was like, if I do not order that piece of equipment right now and start my business this summer, I'm going to have to wait a whole nother year to start my first business because it's seasonal. In Idaho, the ground freezes. We stop exterminating pocket gophers in the winter. Mm-hmm. I need to get going right now. And so I talked to my wife. She's like, yeah, what are you waiting for? Just do it. So I invested some money. I bought this piece of equipment, put an ad in Craigslist, and I think I got my first ever entrepreneurial dollar at the end of May 2012. I think May 24th. 2012. So that was my first business. That business started growing much more rapidly than I had expected it to. And it was just this little niche agricultural business. I ran it as an owner operator for the first 2 years. And it was just this little niche, but it got to the point where it was large enough that I ended up leaving my law enforcement job and running my own business exclusively. And that is what you said a minute ago, living the dream. That is what inspired the Off Farm Income podcast. Was one day I found myself on my own farm, working for myself with total freedom. And I was like, I can't believe this has happened. There's 5 years ago, I wouldn't have dared to dream of this moment because I would have gotten depressed thinking it was never going to happen. And here it is and has happened. And I wanted to tell other people how to get this done for themselves. And that's how the podcast got started, was right there, right in my driveway.
So what share of the people that would follow what you're doing and listening to the podcast and so forth, what share of them would already have some small farming operation that's not quite enough to make it go, and they're looking about making the step into something else because they need more income, versus on the other hand, people that were kind of like you were in a way, were at stage of work as a policeman or something else, they want to do something that's in the farming side.
Yeah.
That maybe they got a little acreage and they can raise goats or they can have chickens mm-hmm. or something like that. How does it split out?
Well, you know, anymore it's difficult for me to answer that question. The podcast has been around now for this December will be 6 years.
Wow, you were doing it before it's fashionable then.
Yeah, I was early, but I wasn't the first by any stretch. Mm-hmm. But I was early in. But this December will be 6 years, and it has evolved so much over the past 6 years that my listener base today is much different than, say, in that first year.
Mm-hmm.
My goal when I first started it was to be the nationwide expert, the only person talking about these small niche owner-operated businesses in agriculture. And I think I was. I think I was, and honestly, I think I still am. The only one who's doing that. for the most part. But early on, my listener base was probably 100%. Well, it was probably 60% people who wanted to find a way to get out and live the lifestyle I was leading, and 40% people who had their small farm. They'd achieved that much, but then they were spending all their time on the road commuting from that farm into a city job, and they're looking for a way to escape that. Today, with 5 episodes per week and all the different types of episodes I'm doing and the way I've kind of broadened the horizons of the show, now my audience has changed completely, or I should say it's morphed, or it's grown larger, and I've got multiple different people from different aspects of agriculture who are listening.
If you're going to pick a group and say that they're mostly this sort of person, is there a way to generalize them that much?
Well, I can only speculate, honestly. Know the ins and outs of podcasting and statistics and things like that. I hear from people. The people who interact with me, the listeners who interact with me, all of them, every single one of them, either has their own place or they're getting ready to purchase their own place or lease their own place. Mm-hmm. They're all doing some sort of farming, and they want that to turn into something more full-time or something that looks like the lifestyle that I have now, which is basically get rid of the city job, stop spending 40 hours a week in a cubicle or whatever that may be, and spend more of that time out on the farm, out in the country, away from the life that they don't want. So of the people who reach out to me, that's almost, if it's not 100%, it's almost 100%. But now with, I do 2 interviews a week with FFA students. And so I know I've got a lot of parents of FFA students. I've got students who listen to me. I've got FFA advisors. So incorporating that FFA component, that broadened my audience out. And then about a year ago, I did a poll with my audience and I asked for their feedback. I wanted to start covering some topics and issues that were broader than just entrepreneurship, small business ownership, and owner-operated type businesses in agriculture. And overwhelmingly, people got back to me and said, yeah, go for it. We'd love to hear, we like listening to you. We like the way you tell the story of agriculture. We'd like to hear more stories from you as well. So I expanded that too and started doing some more stories like that. So things have changed over time. And I think that's necessary with any business. You've got to grow and you've got to pivot and you've got to, stay relevant and all of that. So things have changed over time. But of the people that I get feedback from or who reach out to me, those are almost all people who have those properties. They're looking how to make it work.
I was thinking of the country, the area that you came from, like you spent some time at Modesto Junior College and you're in that part of the world. I remember not long ago, I saw some figures that like over 50,000 people from right in there drive into the San Francisco Bay Area every day for jobs. And anymore, those are like an hour and a half one way.
Yeah.
The traffic is just horrible. And I would think those people are averaging 2 or 3 hours a day wishing they could just stay back, back in the valley and maybe put a couple things together so that they wouldn't have to be doing those terrible commutes.
It's funny you bring that up. And I was just down there, and I think that commute's even longer now. I can remember when I worked at Tracy PD, I'd work a night shift. And I'd get off, I think I got off at 6:30 in the morning, but things would get really slow around 3 or 4 in the morning. And my patrol area, there's an interstate spur called I-205 that runs right through there. And I'd sit and I'd just look at all these cars that were just stopped on I-205 and everybody's trying to get to San Francisco. And it's 4:30 in the morning or it's 5 in the morning, or they're trying to get to Oakland or San Jose. It's crazy. And that commute there is, I've never looked at the statistics, but that's got to be one of the most extreme examples of a commute that we have in our country, because that commute is unreal. But one of the things that inspired me to try and help people stay home was there was an interesting YouTube video I watched. This has been about 5 years ago. And I believe it was the Ohio Farm Bureau put it out, if I remember correctly. And it was a great video. It was a young couple They both had full-time jobs. They both were just completely devoted to farming, actually cattle ranching. And it may have been Missouri. I'm not sure. But anyway, they were totally devoted to this. And I think the reason for the video and the reason they won this Young Farmers and Ranchers Award was because they were going to great lengths to be able to ranch. And it was their devotion that they were trying to reward and praise them for. But the way they explained their devotion was both of these two had jobs about an hour away from their farm they'd bought. And so each of them was commuting, I think, separately, 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And then they, in order to be able to afford their farm, they had purchased it about an hour away from their full-time jobs. So the land prices were lower. Yeah. And so they're doing this 2 hours a day in the car. And as I watched that, and they're talking about how much they love farming and agriculture. My worry for those two young man and that young woman was this commute, and it's going to take your dream. It's going to turn it into a nightmare. And that was my worry for them. And I wanted to help people find a way that they could get rid of that commute. And so this lifestyle they've been dreaming of, and it's so hard to achieve, doesn't turn into something where they're a naysayer or something where it's negative. I want them to have that actual lifestyle they're looking for.
The only good side of it is, Matt, that they're listening to podcasts more.
That's true.
They get in the road, and that's what I keep hearing from people that say, oh, I listen to your podcast because I'm driving up. I got a small farm up at Mount Shasta, and you know, and I listen to them coming and going. And I had one couple that were taking their kids from San Francisco down to Los Angeles. They had little kids or toddlers. And so they wanted them to sleep. So they drive overnight. You know, it's like 7 hour drive from San Francisco to LA. And they told me they listened to my podcast all the way down. And they both were keep dreaming about how they're going to quit their day jobs and be able to be farmers, which is interesting because you notice the various billionaires that are in politics these days. So many of them, the first thing they do is get a farm and they're moving your way, by the way. It just seems like more and more of them. You keep hearing them. They got $1 billion, and so they're going to get a ranch in Idaho and Montana.
Yeah, I know.
You must walk into them all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not just billionaires. Your run-of-the-mill person in California, I don't know what the percentage is, but 1%, 0.5%, I don't know, are selling out, and they're coming up here to the Treasure Valley where I live or somewhere up here. And
well, we're not running out, so I hope you have some more room. Let me just ask you one other quick question about what you might have been noticing of the trends of what people are interested in and stories that you're doing that have implication of people, of either the kind of enterprises that people are drawn towards or new ideas that you find particularly intriguing that you're coming across and doing your stories.
Well, you know, as far as enterprises people are drawn to, I don't have a ton of knowledge. Well, okay. There's some that are very, very common. I can find a guest for this type of business any day of the week, like lawn and, you know, landscaping or lawn care. I can find, there's just, because I go through Craigslist, and that's where I find a lot of guests, is Craigslist all throughout the United States looking at farm and garden services. And so there's a lot of businesses out there for people who are doing like landscaping and lawn care, which is a great business, by the way. It's a great business. I just don't know if it fulfills everybody's who loves farming. I don't know if they look at those things as interrelated, but it is a great business. I see a lot of businesses out there, these small owner operator deals where somebody buys a piece of equipment and then they turn that into a business. It could be brush hogging. It could be excavating. It could be tree removal, you know, in places like Texas or Florida where they get all these volunteer trees and they got to get them out of there, you know, stuff like that. So I see a lot of that. And so those are pretty common. But what I try and do on the show is I try and dig up very, very unique ideas, just like your brothers, which is great. Very, very unique ideas where somebody could hear my show and go, oh my goodness, I've never thought of that, but what a great idea. And that would work here. So I want to expose them to methods and tips and strategies that will help them succeed in whatever business they choose, but I also want to expose them to business ideas or types that they've never heard of and maybe give them that idea. Because I know how hard it was for me to figure out what my first business was going to be. Yeah, so the show is titled Off-Farm Income, and the website is offincome.com, offincome.com. And all the episodes are there, or Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those places.
Really nice to get acquainted with you. Appreciate what you're doing, and I hope that some of the folks that are listening to Farm to Table Talk will check you out. Many of them do already, I think. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks for joining the Farm to Table Talk podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to listen regularly.